Hello, my name is Marie Bilodeau, and you are listening to On the Edge. Today we welcome author K.A. Bedford and his latest novel, Time Machines Repaired, While You Wait. So let's begin with the basics. What does K.A. stand for?
Well, a friend of mine once suggested it stands for kick-ass, but in fact it stands for Kenneth Adrian. Ooh. I'm named after my dad, who's Kenneth William. And when I was growing up, it was either the name be sort of Kenny Jr. or, or something like that. So I kind of revolted at the idea, and Mum very widely sort of named me. I am known mainly by my middle name, which is Adrian.
Perfect. Well, Adrian, then, welcome to On the Edge. So where did you get the idea for Time Machines Repaired While You Wait?
Where did I get the idea? I wish I could tell you. I have no idea. It's probably a better question to ask how the idea found me, really. It's just a weird sort of alchemical thing that happens to writers. They're just minding their own business and suddenly this sort of idea sort of just appears and more or less fully formed in their head and they sort of go with it. I don't know any more about it than that. It's like you're tuned into a radio station which feeds you ideas, but for most of the time it's just nothing but static.
Interesting. So then you had no like childhood obsession with time machine or time travel or anything like that?
Oh, no, I've always loved time travel stories and always loved to write one, but all the ideas I'd had previously really sucked. This was the first decent one I'd had.
So tell us then a little bit about your main character and how he gets caught up in the whole mess.
My main character is a guy called Spider. His nickname is Spider. His first name is Aloysius, and he hates the Aloysius. And so he prefers people to call him Spider because his last name is Webb. You have to understand that people in Australia just about always have nicknames. It's a huge deal. Anyway, so there's this guy called Spider who used to be a policeman years ago, but he left the police force in unfortunate circumstances, and while he was down on his luck, he got befriended by this mysterious benefactor known as Dickhead, who gave him a job, and the job was fixing broken time machines. And Spider absolutely hates time machines and time travel in general. He thinks it's a pointless bit of business. He thinks it robs people of their personal responsibility, and it's just a generally bad idea. And of course, then the people who actually own time machines, because everybody owns time machines now, they do risky, stupid things with them. They don't read the manual. They don't read the instructions. They don't understand anything. And when things go wrong, they bring it into time machines repaired while you wait, and they expect poor Spider to fix it, even though mostly it's their problem. In other words, it's the lot of the customer support or tech support person writ large. And as I say, Spider really hates it, but he's 45 years old, and it's basically his lot in life, and he can't really change or shift. He doesn't pay very much, so he's also poor. He's in a box and can't get out.
Stuck in a bad rut, that one, eh?
He is, absolutely. It's a dreadful situation for him.
Now, for your books and Time Machines Repaired While You Wait, do you do a lot of research? In other words, are your machines theoretically possible?
The machines described in the book are absolutely not theoretically possible. they're creations of pure fantasy. They're motivated by pure plot. They go as fast as the plot goes, basically. time travel as described in the book, I sort of work with the so-called many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, in which basically an infinite number of alternate worlds exist side by side, and it's possible to, but if anything that can happen will happen or does happen in its own little universe, so I use that as a background so that I can have people going back and forth in time and doing stuff and changing things and so forth. Unlike perhaps more sort of classical time travel stories where time is strictly linear, there is only one timeline and you can only change things insofar as they were allow themselves to be changed, which I thought was a bit limiting.
So you have like multiple timelines then that can spark into different directions from one event?
Well, that's right. You can go back in time and kill your grandfather, but then it'll turn out that other problems develop instead, but you'll still probably exist because you'll still exist in another timeline or whatever.
So it's kind of a different take then on action and consequence, whereas one action will have different consequences.
That's right. At any given point in time when you have a choice of things to do, each of those choices ends up being on its own timeline.
It's a complex system you have in a way, because you have like an endless array of possibilities.
Well, that's right. Like, for instance, it's a bit in the book where Spider has to go back in time to talk to someone who he knows has just died, and he has to decide whether he can tell the person who has died that he's going to die.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And that's a bit of a sticky wicket.
Oh, that's a toughie. Now, so let's say that character tries to change something in the past. When they go back to their own time, it won't necessarily be in that timeline where the past has changed, right? That might have taken course.
That's right. If he does something different, it goes off into its own timeline while the original timeline continues unchanged. That's what I was trying to say.
Interesting. That was good. It was good and succinct there. I liked it. Wonderful. So then, so you have like an endless array of possibilities. So that must be a lot of fun. So then, theoretically, if you wanted to, you could have an endless array of stories too. Like, you picked one timeline for Time Machines Repaired While You Wait, but you could have theoretically told another story from another timeline and touched on that one timeline like you do in...
Yes, well, I'm hoping the book does fantastically, awesomely well, and in which case I can write sequels. But it is self-contained enough that in case it really tanks or whatever, I can just stand on its own. I can do something else.
Well, having read it, I personally hope you get to write sequels, because it was a really interesting take on the timelines and also characters that were very endearing in their own ways. So
you read it.
Oh, of course I read it. Of course.
Oh, sorry, I've been interviewed by people who've never read it. various books I've written, and you can really tell. And do tell me about your book. Oh, have you read it? Oh, no. So just kind of fill me in.
No, that's why I could help you kind of go along with your timeline theory there. I read it and I loved it. So I read it actually two nights, so that speaks highly.
Oh, gosh. Did you have any trouble with the Australian sort of slang and that sort of thing?
No, I didn't. There's a couple of ones where...
Tell my publisher, hello.
I will. And I'm French-Canadian here, so if I got it, I feel most people would have gotten it.
Yes, I have always thought so, but I've had this feud with my publisher for about 10 years.
No, it's even if I didn't know exactly what you meant, you know what? The intention was clear enough.
Actually, my publisher was really terrific to me for this book. In the past, he's been a bit sort of iffy about the use of Australian language and idiom and stuff. But for this book, because it's set in Australia, he was more than happy to just let me odds out as much as possible. So he deserves a lot of credit for trying something a bit brave.
That's good. That's good. And it's not always easy too. I mean, he wants your book to succeed as much as others. Now, you're not actually widely available in Australia, are you? Are your books? Not you yourself?
Hell no.
No?
It's a real point.
Mm.
You can get my books at specialist science fiction bookshops.
Okay.
Like Fantastic Planet, right here in Perth on Shafto Lane.
A good shop.
And Pulp Fiction in Brisbane, and Galaxy in Sydney, and others. But in general shops, no, not available. It's because my publisher doesn't have a distribution deal here with another publisher that would publish here. And I'm really hoping to get such a deal.
That would be nice.
It really would. I'd love to be able to go into a bookshop and find my own books.
Oh, my God, yeah, the feeling of that. And when was the first time that you walked into a bookshop and saw your book on the shelves?
That's right. The first time was in Vancouver. We were there in 2004 to tour the first or the second book across Canada in 2004.
Wow.
We started in Vancouver, and we went into a... It was either a Barnes & Noble or a Tabitha, I forget which.
Yeah.
And in the science fiction section, there it was. And it was just the most heartbreakingly amazing moment ever.
Aw. Yeah, that must have been an amazing moment for you, especially waiting till your second book to be able to see one of your books on the shelves.
That's right. It was absolutely fantastic to see. Yeah, it made me feel like, oh, maybe I'm a real writer after all. a very good, validating kind of thing.
A good feeling. So how did you come about being published by The Edge? Because they're Canadian, you're Australian. How did that come about?
That's kind of tricky, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It all happened because I hang out on the internet on a mailing list for writers called Writing Chat. I've been on Writing Chat for probably since 1995 or 94. And there are people there, well, we've been hanging out for a long time. We're all writers, and you know, we pass sort of, mainly we just sort of shoot the breeze, but sometimes stuff about writing actually comes up. And one day, one of the people on the list, a lady named Pam Casto, who's a thorough brick, that is a good thing, came across a flyer for this brand new publishing firm, which had a different name at the time, but they were based in, just starting out in Calgary in Alberta, and they were looking for science fiction and fantasy manuscripts. At the time, I had two books on the go, so I pitched them both at the editor. The editor asked to see both books, and in the end accepted the third one, called Orbital Bird, which became my first book, and rejected the other, and probably a good thing too. And that's how it all started. And basically, the Edge people keep accepting all the stuff I write. It's kind of strange.
Interesting.
But, you know, really good. I like it. But.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they'll secure some Australian distribution for you soon, and that can...
Well, we keep hoping, and I keep sort of nagging Brian about it. Come on, Brian, come on! No, I'm only teasing because Brian and his wife Anita are absolutely fantastic people, and they've done a great deal for me, or for all of us here in Perth. I can't speak highly enough of them, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, well, that's sweet of you. I'm sure they'll be glad to hear that.
Well, I did dedicate this new book to them. Did you notice that?
I did notice that, actually. I thought that was quite kind and sweet. It speaks highly of a publisher.
Now, people here in Perth in the science fiction community, they, you know, often ask me, well, you know, what are the Edge people like to work with? I always say, you know, they're really great. They have been in the past a bit finicky about, you know, Australian content, but apparently not anymore. Go for it.
Yeah, it's a new dawn. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, so one thing led to another, and basically I ended up being published by a firm in Canada. It's not at all what I expected.
Yeah, wonderful. That's a bit of a different take, but an exciting one for us.
Yeah.
Now, quick question here. If you could go back in time, which event would you revisit in your life?
Oh, geez, how long have you got? It's quite a list.
Top one?
I think one of the reasons I think about time travel stories so much is because I have so many regrets and so many things I sort of brood about and think about. And oh, geez, if only I'd done, you know, X instead of Y, you know, oh, man. Too many to mention, really.
I can understand that.
You know, I mean, you know, you spend your life and you do all sorts of dumb things, and you know, you say dumb things to people at the bad times, and, oh, man. And, you know, afterwards you go, what on earth did I say that for? What on earth did I do that for? You know, I wish I could go back and change this or fix that. Except, of course, the way things are set up in the book is that people going back to do those very sorts of things often have turn out to have enormously difficult times of it, because either the person doesn't believe that they're from the future, or they actually do manage to change it, but then something else bad happens instead, or you know, things don't work out the way they're meant to.
Yeah,
is the lesson from the book.
That's
something. Some things even want to happen.
And that's interesting that you mention that, because you're touching on the fact that, yes, we all have regrets, but even if we could go back and change it, we still don't have the ability to predict all the consequences to our actions.
Well, that's right. You end up with consequences that you're not expecting, and can be either just as bad or even worse.
Yeah.
And, of course, people who come have problems like that when they get their brand-new shiny time machines inevitably turn up at time machines repaired while you wait and complain to poor Spider about, I went back in time to try and change my what I was like in high school and ended up being really bad. So it's all your fault.
Aww.
I wanted to fix it, make it better.
No wonder he hates time machines.
Hey?
No wonder
he... That's right. Yeah. Oh, yes, he absolutely hates them. things are no good.
Now, we're going to end on a very important career-defining question here, Adrian.
Okay, I don't know if I'm sort of old enough for this.
Well, we'll take it easy, okay? So,
okay, be good.
A new reader has strolled into a bookstore in Canada and purchased Time Machines Repaired While You Wait. He or she sits down in his big comfy chair and he's about to crack it open and he's ready to lose the entire day to the story. Now, what would you say, and think carefully about this, would be the best drink of any type to accompany the reading?
Oh, well, clearly a Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster, as in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That would be the drink of choice for experiencing a really thoroughly good science fiction yarn.
Those are difficult to find, I hear, though.
Ah, but so good when you do.
Ah, well, then it's worth it. We'll encourage readers out there to go and find one. Well, thank
you. Either that or just a very strong coffee.
Oh, strong. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because your book made me crave coffee a lot.
people in the book do like their coffee.
They do, and I had like 3-4 cups of coffee while reading it, and it was not early in the evening.
Only 3 or 4.
Well, it was late at night. I wanted to sleep at some point.
Oh, okay. Yes, I was really miffed several years ago when it turned out I had high blood pressure, so I had to stop drinking sort of actual caffeinated coffee and move to decaf.
Oh.
And you know, it tastes okay and everything, but it's not the same. Ugh. It's just not the same.
It's true. You have my sympathies. Mm. I always say personally that some people drink themselves into oblivion, but I caffeinate myself into existence.
Mind you, yes, I have heard that, but now that I don't have caffeine, though, on a regular basis, when I do very occasionally accidentally have caffeine, it really messes me up. It's absolutely diabolical stuff.
Oh, that's too bad, though. It's like...
Oh, yeah. It's dangerous.
It's like you found the dark side of caffeine.
It's diabolical and dangerous and bad stuff, but geez, I really want some. Don't miss it.
Most evil stuff is the good stuff, let's face it. Well, thank you so much, Adrian, for being here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It was a lot of fun chatting with you.
Oh, I'm glad you think so. What everybody does.
Well, we'll spread the good word about you. So we'll encourage readers to get their very own copy of Time Machines Repaired While You Wait or any other K.A. Bedford novels.
Well, buy 2 or 3. They're excellent gifts for all occasions.
That's true. And Christmas is coming up in only what?
Absolutely. Christmas is coming.
4 months away. Come on, people. Time to go shopping.
Yeah. Do yourself a favor.
Well, here in Canada, your novels are easy to find. You can either go to edgewebsite.com or any online or physical bookstore. Well, you have yourself a great evening.
You bet.
Bye, Adrian. Okay.
Oh, you have a good day.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I will. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.